welcome to the New Beginnings Message of the Week. We hope you enjoy this message from our Sunday service. For more information about our church, please visit us online at newbeginningscos.com. So I'm going to dive in to the Word this morning. We're going to look at the garden, going all the way back. So we know in the Garden of Eden, when God made creation and put Adam and Eve there, I want to say planted them there. He kind of did. He planted them in the garden, right? And there's two trees that he put, and it says they were right in the center of the garden. So right in the center of the garden, it says, are the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. It's interesting to me that it's the tree of life and not, it's not the tree of life and the tree of good and evil. It's the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And so we have these two trees, and God gave Adam and Eve this instruction to not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Now, again, what's interesting is for the tree of life, he says later on that if they ate from the tree of life, they would live forever. And so there's also the implication of they eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, they will have the knowledge of good and evil. In other words, you receive the fruit from the tree that you eat from. So when they eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, they receive the knowledge of good and evil, but they also receive death. Isn't it interesting that there's the tree of life and the other tree they choose from, actually the receipt of what they get out of that is death. The Lord actually says that because you've eaten from this tree, you will die. Now, that's not just a physical death, right? We know that God, originally people were living for a long, long time, but it's also a spiritual death. So I think it's also interesting. It's interesting that this fruit had a spiritual and a physical implication. And I think we could be safe to assume that the tree of life is the same. There is a spiritual and a physical implication of the tree of life. And so when we look at the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, knowing what's right and what's wrong actually leads them into trouble. You wouldn't think that would be the case. You would think that knowing what's right and knowing what's wrong would actually help walk us into life. And I think a lot of people actually live that way. A lot of people live as if the knowledge of good and evil is what makes them good, is what helps lead them toward goodness. And yet God says, I'm going to ask you to let me be the holder of what's right and what's wrong. He actually asked them not to eat that fruit. He said, look, it's here, but I don't want you to eat from it. It's here, but I want you to make me the repository, the guide, the holder of what is right and what is wrong. Because here's the thing, knowing what's right from wrong makes us responsible for two things. First of all, when we know what's right and we know what's wrong, we're responsible to judge. We're responsible to judge ourselves and we're responsible to judge everything else around us. So if I know what's right and what's wrong, then I'm in the situation where I have to make the judgment of what is right and what is wrong, right? So I have to look around me and go, that's right, that's wrong, that's right, that's wrong, and to do the same internally. So we, first of all, it makes us responsible for being judged. The second is it makes us responsible to put in the effort to stay right. Because if I know what's right, then I am responsible to do what's right. In fact, Paul actually talks about how the law, before the law, it's like you can't break God's law if you didn't know about it, if it was never put in front of him, if he never downloaded the law to Israel. But once the law is in place, he's like, the law is what holds us accountable. The fact that we know what's right and what's wrong is what holds us accountable. And so if you don't do what's right, then you are gonna be in condemnation from that. Us being the holders of what's right and what's wrong means we have to judge, and it means we're responsible to do the right thing. And what that does is it puts us in an impossible situation. Because I don't know about you guys, but you put a big red button in front of me and say, don't touch it. And I mean, I don't know we've seen so many cartoons about this idea, but I think it's real. Like, you're going to keep looking over at the button like, well, what would happen? Why couldn't I just... The fact that you can't do it, it's funny. Even with my kids, there's sometimes that, like, they wouldn't even think about it until we say not to do it. And all of a sudden it's like, but what if I did do it? And it builds the excitement to try something. The thing about knowing right from wrong, it puts us into a zone of black and white thinking. Black and white thinking, it's this or it's that. It's like binary. Do you guys know binary, the computer language code? It's just ones and zeros. It is either a one or it is a zero. There's no other numbers. There's no words. Everything is communicated through one or zero. And I think some people live their life where everything is communicated through black or white. It is right or it is wrong. And when we live in that place, and we live in that place of judge, there's such a burden and a weight on us, because if I don't do the right thing all the time, then all of a sudden I'm a zero. If I don't do the right thing all the time, then I can turn my eyes outward and look at everybody else that's not doing the right thing, and then what do? I become hypocritical and judgmental. Because if we're true with ourselves, if we're honest with ourselves, none of us is getting it right all the time. But if we live out of that right and wrong mentality, then it actually takes what Jesus has done for us out of the picture. It doesn't matter what he's done for us, because I know I'm still guilty. This is where we have people that kind of live in the mindset of, I'm just a sinner saved by grace. I'm still, oh, poor me, I'm the lowest of the low. I can't do anything right. My heart is deceitful and wicked. And so they just think, like, all Jesus did was give me he literally gave me the get out of jail free card, go to heaven. But there's no transformation. There's nothing else that he purchased for me other than the fact that I get to go to heaven when I die, and then I get to be perfect. But that's not what Scripture teaches, right? We receive so much more from Jesus. And so if we live in this place of right and wrong, and we live in this place of everything that I am is bad, we don't actually get to receive and walk in the fullness of the transformation Jesus bought for us. And here's the thing. The biggest problem with this kind of thinking, with the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, is that it requires us to make judgments based on limited information. We have to make judgments on limited information. Will you go ahead and put that picture up? We have this gives you a really good example of it. Has anybody seen this before? If you look at the TV screen, what does it look like is happening? The man on the left is what? Right? But if you look at the actual scene, we see it's a whole different reality. When we try to make a judgment based on limited information, we're going to come out with an incorrect conclusion. We're going to do it wrong. See, here's the thing about God. He's not limited in his context or his information. He understands the whole situation. He understands the depths of the human heart. He understands the history and the background and the pain. He understands the secret motivations. How many of you guys know sometimes people do the wrong thing, and yet inside they actually were doing it for the right reason? Now, that doesn't justify the wrong thing, but when God's looking at the context, he's not seeing zeros and ones. He's looking at life and he's looking at death. And if he's looking at life and he's looking at death, it's not about right and wrong. It's about the context of relationship. And in the context of relationship, things aren't just black and white, either or, zero or one. It's actually, is this drawing you in? Is this bringing life, or is this bringing death? You go ahead and take that down. Thank you. We could never see all that God sees. We can't see the whole perspective. And so if I'm the judge of right and wrong, then really it's almost as if the sun revolves around me, right? How many of you guys know people used to actually think that? They used to actually think that the sun revolved around the earth. Everything revolved around the earth. We are the center of everything. And we still live that way sometimes. I get to be the arbiter, the judge of everything around me. Galileo, in I think it was 1610, was observing Venus with what kind of telescopes they had back then, but somehow he's observing Venus, and he began to realize the earth is moving. We're moving around the sun. And he began to realize there's a greater context to our life, to our universe, that we weren't able to see before, because now we have better tools, we have better resources, we have better understanding to see a bigger picture, to see the broader context. And the result of that was the right and wrong thinking, zero and one thinking society actually he was imprisoned in his home for the rest of his life. So he was tried, found wrong. All of his books were banned. Nobody was allowed to publish any new publications from him, and he lived in his home for the rest of his life. That's the fruit of the thinking that's based in right and wrong. It's not just that there isn't a right and wrong, okay? I want to be clear. I'm not saying that there's no such thing as right or wrong. What I'm saying is that we can't be trusted to correctly judge right from wrong. And God knew that from the start, because eating from the tree gave us the knowledge of this is right and that's wrong, but it didn't give us the context. And the knowledge without the context requires us to make judgments without connection, without intimacy. And the whole thing that God wanted was connection and intimacy. He wanted us to have to come to him to go, God, what do you think about this? One of my favorite things as a parent is that my kids ask me questions. They asked me this morning, where does mustard come from? So in the car on the way here, I put on a little YouTube video of like where mustard comes from. And they get to come to me and I get to go, let me help you understand the broader context here. And that's what God always wanted. He wanted to walk with Adam and Eve in the cool of the day. He wanted humanity to go, when we have a question, when we don't understand something, we come to him because he can go, well, here's right, and here's wrong, and here's the context. Here's why. Here's the bigger picture. The other thing is that, again, it's not that there isn't a right or that there isn't a wrong, but right and wrong are less important than life and death. It's less important. We look at the story of the woman caught in adultery, and this illustrates it really well. I guess I'll bring some scripture in today to make today official, right? I'm kidding. John 8. It says, Jesus went to the Mount of Olives. Now early in the morning, he came into the temple, and all the people came to him and sat down, and he taught them. Then the scribes and Pharisees brought to him a woman caught in adultery. And when they had set her in the midst, they said to him, Teacher, this woman was caught in adultery in the very act. Now Moses in the law commanded us that she should be stoned. What do you say? This they said, testing him, that they might have something of which to accuse him. But Jesus stooped down and wrote on the ground with his finger as though he did not hear. There's a couple things I love about this, and I'm going to continue. But they're saying, here's what the law says. Here's what's right, and here's what's wrong. What do you say? And what they're looking for him to do is they're looking for him to contradict himself. They're looking for Jesus to contradict God and say, well, God said this is bad, I say this is okay. Or what they're looking for is for Jesus to say, yes, she should be stoned. Because if he does that, then he is backing them, he's backing the religious system, and he's saying, yes, she's worthy of death, go ahead and kill her right now. And then they can say, he has backed us in everything that we say and we do. And Jesus comes along and he goes, I'm going to take option C, please. Because this woman's in front of them, and they ask him a very specific question, and Jesus won't even answer the question. In fact, in this whole passage, he does not answer their question. He kneels down and he draws in the sand, and that does a couple of things. First of all, it takes their attention from what they want him to say to what he's doing. All of a sudden, they're watching what he's doing. Okay? The other thing that happens is they're not looking at her anymore. Jesus instantly drew their attention away from her to himself. And he said, instead of focusing on what I'm going to say, I want you to watch what I'm doing. And we don't know what he was drawing in the sand. I've heard some people say that he was writing out the sins of the Pharisees. I've heard all kinds of different things. You know, I don't see that Jesus was... I don't see his nature being to expose people's sin in that way. And when he did, it was in that personal, like even with the woman at the well where he talks about her husband's, like that's literally just him and her. And so I don't know about that, but I do know he drew their attention away from her. And it says, so when they continued asking him, he raised himself up and said to them, he who is without sin among you, let him throw a stone at her first. And again, he stooped down and wrote on the ground. Then those who heard it, being convicted by their conscience, went out one by one, beginning with the oldest, even to the last, the youngest. And Jesus was left alone, and the woman standing in the midst. When Jesus had raised himself up and saw no one but the woman, he said to her, "Woman, where are those accusers of yours? Has no one condemned you?" She said, "No one, Lord." And Jesus said to her, "Neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more." Catch this. Right after this happened, because this is in the middle of a crowd, okay? When this started, Jesus was teaching people, and they make an incident right in front of everybody, and they bring this woman out, and Jesus draws their attention away from her to himself. The other thing he does by kneeling down like that, he diffuses the energy and the anger in the room, right? They're like high intensity. They're like ready for a fight. And he's like, he just chills everybody down. And then he tells the woman to go and sin no more. And then he says this. It says, Jesus spoke to them again, meaning he goes back to teaching. And he says, "I am the light of the world. He who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but have the light of life." Life. He doesn't tell them anything about right or wrong. He tells them about intimacy and connection. And even the woman in her sin, Jesus takes it from being about whether or not what she did was wrong, and he turns it into the Pharisees, what is your connection with the Father? What is your intimacy with him? How much life are you walking in? And all of a sudden, it shifts the whole perspective. Because even though the law said it was right for her to be stoned, that wasn't life. Life said, there's a way for reconciliation. There's a way for newness. The law was to show that nobody's without sin. The law was to not to pick people who were in really bad spots and then ostracize them from society or to kill them so that everybody else could be perfect. The law was actually to expose the darkness in everyone's heart. And when it exposed the darkness in everyone's heart, we realized that right and wrong is never going to get us where we called to be. But life, the tree of life, is where we can do that. And that's one of the things that Jesus purchased for us on the cross, was to go back and choose a different tree. When Jesus died on the cross, we get to go back, and instead of eating from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, we get to eat from the tree of life. He is the tree of life. He actually says right there, "I'm the light of the world. He who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but have the light of life. Eat from me, and you have life." So when we eat from a different tree, it's not about whether or not I'm right or whether or not I'm wrong. It's not about whether or not the situations and the people around me are right or wrong. It's about life and death. Is this clicking here? Is this okay? Deuteronomy, going all the way back to the Old Testament, God was really trying to draw them into a better way of thinking than just here's the good thing and here's the bad thing. In Deuteronomy 30, verse 19 and 20, he says, "I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Now choose life so that you and your children may live and that you may love Yahweh your God. Listen to his voice and hold fast to him. For Yahweh is your life, and he will give you many years in the land he swore to give to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." See, the tree of life gives us context because it gives us a relationship. The tree of life is about, as I have intimacy and connection with the Father, all of a sudden I'm able to see a greater context because my actions are not in relation to myself and this unliving, stoic, good and bad. My actions are in relation with a living, personal God. My actions are in relation to the living, personal people that are around me. It's not just good and bad. There's so much more to it. I'll give you an example. I'm married to my amazing wife who led worship for us this morning. Would it be right for me to regularly buy expensive gifts for another girl? Would that be right? Okay. What if it's my daughter? What if it's my daughter? This is why the right and wrong thinking doesn't work, right? Because it's about life. Or my mother, right? That's why context is important. That's why relationship is important, right? And I think sometimes we think it's so easy to watch a news, you know, program, or to read an article, or to see what happens to this leader somewhere, and to get the limited information we have and make a judgment, right, wrong. And when we live in that place, we live in the place. Listen, Paul actually says, like, how we judge is how we will be judged. If I judge based on right and wrong, and I'm just casually and callously pointing the finger all the time, that will hit back at us. That the fruit of that kind of living. Because if I'm going to judge others on the merits of their rightness or wrongness without the context that the Lord has, then I'm going to experience the same thing. I don't think God will do that to us. I actually think that's going to be the natural fruit. Honestly, I think we do it a lot to ourselves. I think we judge and we condemn ourselves. We judge and we condemn. We look at our parenting. We look at our kids. We look at our situations, and we just get inward on ourselves, and it's like, oh, you know, we really make ourselves feel better by pointing the finger. But the reality is, whenever we're doing that because in here we feel like I don't measure up, and it's really nice to take the spotlight off of myself for once and put it out on these other people. I think sometimes we get stuck in this question of, am I more good today than bad, or am I more bad today than good? I think the biggest thing we have to ask is, if God only made decisions based on what was right, would he have gone to the cross for us? If God only made decisions based on what was right versus what was wrong, would he have gone to the cross for us? Because that wasn't a legal decision. That was a love decision. Romans 5:8 says, Christ proved God's passionate love for us by dying in our place while we were still lost and ungodly. So we have to ask, is it right for a perfect God to die for the lost and ungodly? I would say I don't think that is right, but it is life. It is connection. It's relationship. The greater context of it, we're his precious creation from the very beginning. You know, when we think about how we do this to ourselves, I think the inner criticism and that inner voice, there's an amazing story. I literally just read this on Facebook the other day. Some of you guys came and saw, who saw The God Man with us? If you saw it in theaters or here, Robbie Dawkins, who's in that movie, amazing man of God, and he's going in there and he's praying for people, and they're seeing healings and they're seeing prophetic words, and I think we got to watch him like lead two people to Christ right there through the power of prophetic evangelism and healing. He wrote this post the other day, and he posted a couple pictures of the movie, and he said, I want to be vulnerable here for a minute. I think it's important for everyone to know that while this was being filmed, I was in one of the hardest situations of my life. And he said, I was facing betrayal, I was facing depression, I was facing a real crisis of the people around me and knowing who to trust. And he's like, there were these people that were there for me and supportive. And he didn't get into specifics about who did what, but he just said, it's important to know that when this was happening, I was not in a great place, but the Lord moved anyway. And this has ministered to so many people. And I love that he was willing. Listen, he didn't have to share that. But to say, when we recognize that somebody can be struggling and that God moves through us anyway, he's not looking at how good or how bad are you today. My impact, my anointing, my power in the Spirit, my connection with the Lord is not dependent on how good or how bad I am. Not in any moment of the day. So some days I might feel like, man, I'm more bad than good today. I'm struggling. I'm angry with my kids. I'm distracted. I'm focused on other things. And really all it takes is for me to realize God's not, like I said earlier, he's not out there pouting somewhere in the corner of the house and I got to go track him down. He's available and present. The reality is, he says, I'm not out there pouting. He's like, but you do that. If we are willing to take the self-condemnation glasses off on ourselves will realize that the Lord doesn't have his on. And when we do, it doesn't matter how tough things are, we're going to find that his presence and his intimacy and his anointing is with us. 1 Corinthians 4, verses 3 and 5 says, but Paul is speaking, and Paul says, but with me it's a very small thing that I should be judged by you or by a human court. Paul's saying, I don't care what you think of me. I could be judged by any one of you, and that's not a big deal. And catch this. He says, in fact, I do not even judge myself, for I know of nothing against myself. Can you imagine? I know of nothing against myself. Imagine literally saying that. Do you think that Paul was perfect? I don't. But he knew the difference between living in right and wrong thinking versus living in life. And he said, look, I'm living in life. It doesn't mean I didn't make a mistake this morning. It doesn't mean I didn't say a grumpy word to somebody. He says a lot of grumpy words, even in scripture, like they're captured. But he's there and he's saying, look, I know of nothing against myself. And I think the Lord is saying to you, I know of nothing against you. And if we would take that perspective, what could we accomplish as his sons and daughters? If we would say, this is about life, it is not about right and wrong. Paul says, I'm not justified because I don't know of anything against myself. He says, he who judges me is the Lord. Therefore, judge nothing before the time until the Lord comes. I love that he gets clear about it. Judge nothing until the time. And we might think, oh, well, judge nothing until I have what I think is the greater context. Or judge nothing until I know for sure what I feel about this person or this situation. He's saying, judge nothing before the time until the Lord comes. In other words, until the Lord comes, don't think that you have the context to judge what's happening in another person's heart, even what's happening in the world. He wants us to always come to him to get that intimate place of context. And so Paul says, he will both bring to light the hidden things of darkness and reveal the counsels of the hearts. Then each one's praise will come from God. God's not looking to you saying, who do you think is great? God's, when we praise somebody, God's not going, oh, great, you got it. When we condemn someone, God's not going, that's right, you see what I see. He's actually saying, I want you to come to me, because if we can get his heart and his perspective, if we can live out of life, it changes everything. It changes how I view my spouse, my kids, my work life, my friends, my family. It changes how I interact with people, because I'm not looking at behavior that I can observe. I'm actually asking the Lord to reveal things to me after the Spirit. It's amazing to me, just on a side note, we put ourselves and other people on the cosmic scales of good and bad, right? And it's amazing to me how many people who call themselves Christians still think that going to heaven is based on being good. It's amazing to me how many people still would say, if I'm good enough before I die, I will get to go to heaven. And that they don't realize has nothing to do with that. Because what happens is, if I think if I'm good enough before I die, I could get to go to heaven, then when I see somebody who's living a bad life, I see no hope. But if I understand that it's about life, I can look at the worst person in the worst situation. I can look at Hitler. I can look at, you know, and I can see there is a seed of hope. Because it's not about what they have done, it's about the potential for life, and the potential for life is there in every human being, in every heart. It's just, will they go after that? Will they accept it? Will they receive it? A couple more things on this. Galatians 5:1 says, it is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then, and do not let yourselves be burdened again by a yoke of slavery. So Paul takes us even further into this place of life instead of right and wrong. And he's actually saying, it's for freedom that we've been set free. Do not let yourself be. Now, here's talking about a church that was getting very legalistic and basically saying, like, here's all of the, they were getting very pharisaical and saying, here's the rules and the laws and the things that you have to be under. And Paul's like tossing the whole thing out. And he says, it's for freedom that you've been set free. In fact, he takes it even further in 1 Corinthians 10:23. And I think we skip over this sometimes because it can be a little uncomfortable. But here's what he says in this verse. He says, all things are lawful, that is morally legitimate, permissible. All things are lawful. All things are permissible. And we can go, well, yeah, but not really, right? Because these things are bad. We know that's bad. We know God doesn't like this, right? Again, I'm not saying there isn't right and there isn't wrong. But the question is why? Why do we make the decisions we make? Because if I abstain from a behavior because I believe that it's wrong, that doesn't require any intimacy with the Father. But if we realize that it is for freedom that he set us free, and Paul says all things are permissible, but not all things are beneficial or advantageous. All these things are lawful, but not all things are constructive to character and edifying to spiritual life. This is the Amplified version. Not all things are constructive to character and edifying to spiritual life. In other words, I don't keep myself from it because it's wrong. I keep myself from it because it wounds my relationship with my God. Does that make sense? If there's a food place that I love. I talk about food a lot because I love food. And I was thinking about this particular piece of the talk, and I was like, what's my favorite place? And I was like, Taco Express. Like, I don't go to the normal. It's not Chick-fil-A or Chipotle. It's Taco Express. It's this carne asada burrito, and the only flaw it has is they don't add cheese automatically, so you have to ask for cheese. But it has guacamole, and it has this steak, and it has this seasoning. Every bite just explodes flavor in your mouth. And it's like, my wife asked me, she's like, what do you want for Father's Day? And I'm like, Taco Express. That's what I got for myself. Like, no, I don't want a fancy restaurant. I just want another burrito. Like, I want one right now. But here's the thing. If my wife said to me, I don't want you to get Taco Express anymore, I could go, why not? There's nothing wrong with it. It's not bad to eat Taco Express. I could prove to you that it's healthier than McDonald's. It's cheaper than McDonald's. I could give her all the reasons that I'm right. But the reality is, if I want life with my wife, and she said to me, I don't want you to have Taco Express anymore, and the only reason is just because that's what I'm asking you, I would never have it again. Because it's not about what's right or what's wrong. It is about connection. It's about intimacy. It's about life. And that changes everything. Because again, when we look at other people, when we look at the decisions that they make, it's so easy to take the cheap seats and go, that's right and that's wrong, and eat from the same tree that led to thousands of years of humanity not being connected to the heart of God, because he said, I desire mercy, not sacrifice. The same God that gave the law actually desired mercy in regards to the law. What's so interesting is that there's the bare minimum of right and wrong, and God's like, let me show you something further. There's fasting, right? Fasting, I voluntarily say something that is good, I'm going to forgo for something that is better because I want my heart to be connected with him. The Nazarites, they would make this vow, and they would let their hair grow, and they would abstain from certain things. And it wasn't a right and wrong issue. God was saying, this is where it gets real. He's like, if you want to make a special vow with me, this is what it's, because all of a sudden now we're not talking about just doing the good thing. We're talking about being with me because you want to. Being with me because it's voluntary, not because you're afraid I'm going to smite you. Jesus and his disciples, they picked the heads of the grain in the field as they were walking. And the Pharisees go, this is, you're breaking the Sabbath. And Jesus healed people on the Sabbath. Jesus really liked to mess with people's idea of the Sabbath. They're like, you're not supposed to work. And Jesus said, you don't understand. This isn't work for me. This is rest. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. In other words, we look at a higher, Jesus, God looks at a higher value. He's the one that gave the law. But the heart of man, the value of humans, the value of life is above the law. It changes everything. I want to read one more piece of this, Matthew 12. This is the same situation here. It says, at this time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath, and his disciples were hungry and began to pluck heads of grain to eat. And when the Pharisees saw it, they said to him, "Look, your disciples are doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath." But he said to them, "Have you not read what David did when he was hungry, he and those who were with him, how he entered the house of God and ate the showbread, which was not lawful for him to eat, nor for those who were with them, but only for the priests? Or have you not read in the law that on the Sabbath the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath, and yet they are blameless? Yet I say to you that in this place there is one greater than the temple, but if you had known what this means, 'I desire mercy and not sacrifice,' you would not have condemned the guiltless." Did you hear what he just said? He just said, you're condemning the guiltless. In the world of right and wrong, they are not guiltless. In the world of right and wrong, David ate the bread of the presence. The bread of the presence was only for the priests. He was wrong. But Jesus says he is wrong. He's guiltless. Again, all of this doesn't make sense if we live out of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. It only makes sense in that out of the context of the tree of life. He calls guiltless those. Here's the other interesting thing. When David ate that bread, the bread that was only for the priests, I love that it's called the bread of the presence. It's the bread of the presence. And that's what we see reflected in David's life. A heart that said, more than anything else, I want the presence of God. I want connection with him. I want to see him because I know he sees me. And because he went after that, the wrong things that he did not get him cast out as king. In fact, it actually says in the Bible, he accomplished everything that God had for him in his generation. And yet, he did some worse things than other kings that were cast out of the kingdom, right? Really, if you look at it, did he do worse things than Saul? Like, in some places? Yeah. But here's the difference. Saul took the power of God upon himself and the authority to do whatever he wanted to do without intimacy. David did the wrong thing with a heart that was only after God. We have to be able to say, primacy for me is the presence of God, is connection with him, is intimacy with him. And I'm going to let him be the arbiter of what's right and what's wrong because I don't have the context. You know what it does? It makes us a little bit helpless. It makes us a little bit helpless to go, I have to constantly go to the Lord to say what's right, what's wrong. But what it also does is it makes us innocent again. Because when I don't have to go, what's right, what's wrong, when somebody wounds me and they offend me and they're doing the wrong thing, I'm not sitting there in my self-righteousness going, I'm right, you're wrong. But I get to, in innocence and in helplessness, go to the Lord and go, why is this happening? What do you see in this situation? What's going on in this person? And instead of personal offense, I get to walk in, well, how do I bring life here? What does it look like to bring life into this situation? I think the Lord is asking us to step beyond, to step into something greater, to step into a perspective that is not so easily outwardly critical, but that actually looks at how do I bring life? When I look at our president and the things that he's done that I completely disagree with, I can look at that and go, man, I can't wait for this guy to leave. Man, I can't wait for somebody better. I can look at the decisions he's made and go, man, this is just straight from hell. And I would be right about some of those things. But the question is, how do we balance speaking truth in life, right? Speaking truth and love and life and connection and intimacy, the context that only the Lord has. So as we close, I just want to ask us to just close our eyes for a minute. wants to just reflect on where have we walked in the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? Where have we let our own judgment become the thing that we live by? Where have we let our perspective become higher than his? And Father, we just ask you to undo that in us. We ask for forgiveness where we have judged in that way. God, I ask that you would undo the work of the knowledge of good and evil inside of us, and that you would give us the fruit of the tree of life. Jesus, we know that we get to live forever because of your death and resurrection. The fruit of the tree of life is ours physically, and it's also ours spiritually, God. I pray that you would awaken our spirits to become more alive, more filled with your life, more filled with your love, able to see people with tenderness and empathy and compassion. Father, we trust you. We trust your judgment. We don't look for our own satisfaction, but we want to be connected with you. So here's the other piece of this. Sometimes the Lord will ask you to give up something good to have something better. Is he calling you to a fast? Is he calling you to let go of something that's been pulling you from him? Maybe there's something in your life and it's not bad. Maybe it's not wrong. But the Lord is saying, would you lay that down just because I'm asking you to? Would you lay that down just because you love me? Would you come to a place of life? So as we worship in this last song, let's just seek his heart in that and just see what he says.